Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. I'm super excited to be here today. Today's guest is Kyle Forst. He's a leader at Deloitte focused on the future of HR, workforce strategy, and how organizations can evolve to unlock human and business potential. Kyle's really passionate about rethinking what experience really means, shifting from a tenured-based model to skills-based contributions. He helps companies really think differently about how people grow, how work gets done, and how to align teams around what actually really matters. So from organizational psychology to new role design, Kyle brings a thoughtful, practical lens to building better teams and better futures. So Kyle, I just like so enjoyed our conversation when we met, however long ago that was. And I'm just really excited and honored that you're here. And so I'd love, is there anything you want to add in terms of like what you do or anything I didn't mention?
Yeah, certainly. And Bobbi, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It is a pleasure to be able to join you for this. You know, we've had some great conversations along the way. So, you know, I think there's a few things I would maybe add for folks is there's a lot that has changed in the world over the last few years, over any period of time. And so much of that is in context to what is the human experience or human implication. And if we weren't thus understanding what is happening for the humans in context to whatever the topic is, macroeconomic, technological, you know, when the pandemic happened from a health perspective, right? Like that is all in context to human. And so it's that much more important to double down on understanding how do humans think? Right? What does this mean from an individual perspective? What does this mean for a team? How does that look like for a grouping of teams within an organization? And so really excited about the conversation today and to dig into a few of the things that I know, you know, we're going to be chatting about.
Amazing. I know. Isn't that kind of wild? I mean, I was just on another call earlier, but it's like, and I know this was not what we were going to, the first question I was going to kind of ask you, but it is so funny to me that especially in the world of work, we have like, taking the human out of it, really. And like, I think now kind of coming out of COVID and sort of in this culture of AI and technology, all these, now we're like, well, how do we bring the human back into it? What does this even look like? But it's so wild to me that this isn't just sort of so foundational.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and I think even to the kind of gist of your comment there is, you can look at any number of management practices over the decades, right? And the context and framing and the way it's always discussed is not necessarily what did this mean for the humans at that point in time, right? Mm-hmm. When Henry Ford first got the Model T, you know, line, it was all about, wow, like here are pieces of a car that are getting put together in a certain way, and that's output of cars, right? Mm-hmm. And then over time, yes, it became, well, what did that mean for the work, right? For the humans, right? Mm-hmm. Like you went from all this highly skilled labor to some commoditized skills, right? In activities and tasks. And you look at that same thing, right? If you look at early COVID when you know, knowledge workers specifically were working at home, right? Because there were still many professionals in frontline type of roles, whether factories or healthcare or retail, who were still going into their place of work. But for knowledge workers, the first thing was digital transformation, right? What are the new tools that we're using? And then it became, what does that mean for the humans, right? Now we're working back-to-back, you know, calls all day long or constant pings, or how does this mean for well-being and things along those lines? And so as well, right now, there's been a lot of conversation around AI and automation, right? Mm-hmm. Generative AI, agentic AI, you name it. And what is really interesting is when you actually then talk to leaders, workers, and say, okay, this is something that we're doing around this topic. There then becomes this question of, what does that mean for the humans?
Mm-hmm.
How do I get an individual to change their behavior and adopt the tool? How does the role for that person change? How does the team structure change? What does this look like, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this lag sometimes of intentionally having the conversation around what this means for human. And I think one of the things that I would challenge and that some of our Deloitte research would actually challenge folks to think about is, how do you talk about the business outcome you're trying to drive
mm-hmm.
and the human outcome at mm-hmm. the same time? Because if you're doing that, you should be able to achieve a better ROI from a mm-hmm. business perspective and at the same time drive faster human change, human adoption of whatever you're trying to do. So
mm-hmm. yes, we'll see where things go.
And hopefully people are able to start to adopt that type of mentality, and that should unlock new and different things for us in the world.
Yeah. And I love that, like, people are at least starting to have this conversation more and more. Like, it's this, as sort of we kicked off this conversation, and one of our, you know, anytime we go to work with a company, one of the first slides we show are sort of like the sort of from groups is like all the tactical stuff that companies and teams do really well with.
Yep.
But then the people side of it gets neglected, like the motivation and the purpose and the connection, all these things.
Yeah.
But when you don't focus on that, that's like the oil that makes the machine work, right?
Yeah.
And so even if you don't care about anything from an emotional kind of perspective, if you like don't have a heart or a soul, it actually still serves the business in terms of meeting the business goals, because you're neglecting this whole other side of like how work gets done.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Well, and Bobby, I'll say earlier this spring, I was chatting with a CHRO, a chief human resources officer at a company, who said one of the roles that she would like to see come front and center into the HR function or even to work the workplace at large in the not too distant future are neuroscientists.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which many people might say, oh, that's the domain of academia or mm-hmm. life sciences companies who are studying different problems. But the rationale that she had was, if you understand how the human brain works
mm-hmm.
and how it reacts to stress,
mm-hmm.
right, can you thus design a work day or a work week
yes.
that helps make people, you know, if you go into a high stress meeting, right, whether you're mm-hmm. selling or innovating, how do you design coming out of that to take a break, refresh, like mm-hmm. remove the stress from the system and thus being back to more productive, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's actual measurable linkages you can mm-hmm. make from stress, right, to well-being,
mm-hmm.
from well-being to like absenteeism, right, or how
yeah.
you show up in the workplace, from absenteeism to productivity to sales, innovation,
yes.
product cycles, you name it, right? So all of that is a very measurable chain, but oftentimes different executives are measuring only a piece of the chain. And so they're not bringing it all together. And that is a tremendous opportunity for organizations going forward.
Yeah. I mean, I'm so excited about that. So like so yesterday I was telling you, I was just at this conference, Worth Media had this like health and longevity conference. And I spoke at to organizational health. I was literally explaining to the audience really why, and I was looking through the team's lens, but if I even take this at a higher level and you're really talking about the neuropsychology, like I'm a health psychologist by training, not an
sure.
organizational psychologist. I just sort of play one, you know, in my day to day now.
Yep.
But it's like from a health psych view, the way we look at health and functioning and optimization is from the biopsychosocial, sometimes sort of like spiritual, or what I would think of it as purpose in the workplace.
Yep.
What's going on with their body? So like think about like health and well-being on a physical front.
Yep.
And then there's the psychological, which is like the coping, the mindsets, the like the thoughts and the behaviors that support
sure.
Functioning. And then the other one, and that's the area I'm really focused on, is the social. How can you use the social environment, the team environment, which is oftentimes like harder to understand, but really drives me.
Yep.
And so for me, I'm like, there's concepts. If you really drill down in the social side of this, team can kind of make or break how someone feels
yep.
in the workforce. And there's certain variables that really impact how someone's willing to show up. So as an example, you're talking about neuropsych. Like when we don't feel like we belong on a team, or there's not high levels of psychological safety, our amygdala is firing, which is our fight or flight response. Yep. Our amygdala and our frontal lobes are kind of like operate inversely. So when we're really stressed, our higher level cognitive functioning, our free thinking, our creativity is literally suppressed. We're kind of in basic operating mode.
Yeah.
And so we have to help leaders understand that, like, I think right now, particularly, you know, psych safety, it gets filed as like a DEI thing or something that's sort of nice to have versus actually very much directly correlated to things like profitability, retention, engagement, and dollars at the end of the day. But you really nicely mapped out the links. And I think that's the work that we're tasked with right now, is helping people kind of make those links and then providing solutions to solve for them.
Yeah. And what I would say, there's a phrase that I heard from an executive coach a few years ago, which was, it's common sense, but not common practice.
1,000%.
So how do you turn common sense into common practice, right? Because if you sit down with a leader and say, hey, if you've got an employee who's scared or nervous in a meeting, and thus they're not going to bring their best thinking forward, and thus you might miss out on an idea that could drive revenue or close a sale, the leader will say, I totally believe that, right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, how do we help the employee not be scared or nervous in the meeting, right?
Yeah.
So it's some of this is just like making the conversation explicit that versus sometimes implicit, right? And things that people know and hear and understand, and how do you turn that into part of your day-to-day? And Deloitte, actually, we did some research in the last few years around the what we call the four factors of trust.
Mm.
And we started with the simple premise of, if I ask a room of people, how do they define trust? I will probably get a room of different answers.
Yep.
But if I ask them, how do you define reliability?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone will probably say, they said they would do it and they did it.
Yep.
Right? Or how do you define a high quality experience, right? People will give you pretty much the same thing, right? And so then we came up with these four measures, which were essentially transparency, meaning easy to understand language, right? With the right set of information. Reliability, capability, meaning the kind of high quality experience. And then humanity. Do you have empathy? Is it contextualized for what's happening in the moment? And if you can then measure those four things and say, where am I today and where am I going? And you can take deliberate actions and behaviors against it, right? And so that's another angle that ties into the psychology of the worker, the workplace, you know, teams, et cetera, and actions that organizations can take to really then drive, you connect that to business outcomes, right? Are we selling more? Do we have higher customer retention scores or customer engagement scores? Are we innovating faster? You know, whatever those things are, right? It just becomes a function of measuring. And in this whole world of AI and automation, a lot of it is about, can you connect disparate systems and data sets together to make something happen? It's the same concept otherwise, right? I've got sales over here and HR over here and engineering or whatever. How am I connecting different things that those groups are measuring together so that you've got one view as to the business and human outcomes an organization is trying to achieve?
Mm-hmm. There's so much you're saying. I just love this conversation. One is, and it's like whenever I start class, basically, like, you know, in any of my classes, I'm like, psychology is not rocket science. I'm not going to pretend that like this is more complicated than some of your other classes, but like we're not taught to see these skills, to see these dynamics and like this world that's like psychology is every day, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
But once you learn to see the matrix, you can't unsee it.
Yep.
And what we always say to teams is like, there's like, it's not just these sort of soft feeling stuff. It's like you're actually look now once you can see the matrix, so to speak, you have things you can operate and execute on because now we have words and labels and ideas that we can solve for. And the other thing you said, it's just so foundational sort of from more of the clinical side of the house, which is like, in any group setting, you take the implicit and make it explicit. And it's basically the same thing. Like, how do we talk about these things in a direct way so we can operate and execute on them?
Yep.
And then I love the framework you brought up, like with Deloitte's research, which when you said, like, how do we get there? In my mind, I'm thinking it's like teaching leaders the fundamentals of sort of psychology and coaching so yep. they can actually see the matrix. And then, like, you know, and I think you all have put a nice framework together that allows people to look through these lenses, you know, using those four quadrants to actually be able to do something versus feeling like I don't even know where to start because I don't like know this field, you know?
Yeah. 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 Well, and I've got to say, any conversation that where we can weave in a reference to the Matrix or other sci-fi, it means we're having the right conversation. But it's also to your point, and this is actually what's you know fascinating about the moment that we're in the world, because I'm personally a science fiction fan, movies, TVs, books, etc. There's so much for us to learn from some of those things, mm-hmm. right? And how do we then apply and think about some of those concepts like in the moment, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, a little bit sometimes, and we were talking about, you know, this in you know, an earlier conversation, where, you know, where do we start thinking very intentionally about what is the work that humans will be doing, should be doing, mm-hmm. want to be doing, feel excited and passionate mm-hmm. and, you know, productive versus where should we be using AI and automation, right? Mm-hmm. Or quote unquote machines, whether it's a digital machine or physical, right? Because AI and automation is not a new theme or topic to the world, mm-hmm. right? It started in factory floors or, you know, when certain inventions were introduced to agriculture, right? And there have been tremendous benefits given to humanity, right, to do mm-hmm. that. And we're at this early moment where we're still determining what are all those benefits that will be applied mm-hmm. or obtained via AI and automation from a knowledge worker perspective, like as you unlock mm-hmm. capacity of people. Is it a more sustainable work week? Mm-hmm. Is it that much more innovation for net new ideas into the world that make people's lives better, right? Like there's still some of the framing of where is this ahead? And hopefully, right, everyone will take this, you know, this optimistic outlook, right? Because I know there is a very real moment of kind of anxiety or concern mm-hmm. for people around how will my role change? Do I have the right skills? Will I get the right skills? You know, all of these things. What does that mean for my career? What does that mean for my family life, my personal life? You know, it's mm-hmm. just a moment that we have to navigate. And it then comes back to leaders understanding if you know this psychological impact on your employees and the, you know, higher levels of baseline anxiety or stress that they might be mm-hmm. dealing with, how do you help navigate that, mm-hmm. right? How do you help keep your workforce focused? And how do you help keep them, you know, driving positive outcomes for the business? Mm-hmm. If the business outcomes are positive, that should be positive outcomes for the humans, whether that's the workers or the end customers. And it should be the workers and the end customers, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, many, I'm sure, folks will be writing case studies and books and articles about this moment in time as we navigate through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're making me think. It was something you said at the beginning, and it makes sense because you said you love books and movies and things. And it's like you talked about Henry Ford and sort of we don't have the ability, generally speaking, I think as human, we have the ability, we just don't often practice this, is to basically step out of the everyday and look yep. like from almost from above, like what are yep. we doing yep. versus just trying to wake up and get through the day and rush to the end yep. line, you know? And what I can hear in you is the ability to actually separate from this and actually take an observation kind of perspective where I'm like, where are we? Are we on the right track? What are the fundamentals of being human that need to be met? Yep. And what are the challenges with whatever the new technology is? So right now, like it's sort of, you know, AI in the mainstream is that yep. right now. But like one thing that I just know is, as a, you know, from a psychological perspective is that humans need to feel like they belong and they need to feel yep. like they're like in control in some capacity. Yep. So whenever there's a new technology that's like going to potentially threaten their jobs or the way they've done things, even if it's for the better, there's going to be an element of uncertainty and fear. Right. And so like, unless you can meet someone where they are in that regard, you're not going to get the best out of them.
Yeah.
Right. And trying to convince them that AI is the best is not the way to go. It's like to actually, I mean, you have to help them understand the possibility, but it's actually leaning into the emotional, which is like, well, what are you actually scared of? Let me help understand. And then once you like, that's where coaching comes in, when you can actually help build, get the rapport going, really listen to the person, then you actually have levers to push on in terms of challenging, maybe thinking that's not 100% accurate, right? Because you don't know enough about the technology or the AI or the company or whatever it is.
Yep.
But that's sort of what I was kind of thinking as you were speaking.
Well, and Bobby, there's a few different things from some of our Deloitte research that came out in March, our 2025 Global Human Capital Trends Report, which we've been publishing since 2011.
Awesome.
We had 13,000 responses this year, 90 different countries, so it's global. We split survey input between executives and workers. And kind of what you just said prompted one of the chapters that we really dove into was a call to action for organizations to actually create or redefine their employee value proposition and intentionally, explicitly be AI forward, right? Mm-hmm. So tell candidates that come to your organization, regardless of industry sector, right? Because AI and automation, again, is being applied to different types of roles and jobs, whether it's frontline retail, nurses, doctors, manufacturing floor, or doctors, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
So tell candidates, these are the types of tools and the ways in which we're investing in AI and automation. Here's how you will learn that day one, week one, month one, year one of onboarding and being with us. And here's the investments that we're making to help you as a human continue to evolve your skills and career along the way, right?
Yep. The scaffolding.
And you gotta say that to your current workers, because those are the folks who might have the most anxiety about it. Because if they don't get that message internally that says, here's the investments we're making in you, our workers, right? Then that becomes, you know, one of those challenges, right? Now, ideally, what would be some of part of the framing gets into another trend that we saw in our research, which is all around how do you unlock the capacity of humans to do more and better and different things, right? Mm-hmm. And out of our 13,000 respondents, people were saying that 40% of their time is spent on non-value add type things, right? Whether I'm a manager.
40%? Did you say?
40%.
Holy cow. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm a manager and I'm approving travel and expense reports.
Mm-hmm.
I'm spending time on an overly complicated performance management process. You know, pick your thing. Maybe I'm an employee and I'm just searching for, I need the answer on this policy. You know, what can I book for travel, or where do I find something about a leave of absence or something, right? And so if you could unlock that 40% capacity, think about what you could do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe that's more time back to focus on selling, innovating, engaging with customers. Maybe that's time back. So if I go to that neuroscience example, to take a break before and after a stressful meeting, right? Mm-hmm. So that I can kind of clear my body of some of the stress and thus have a higher average productivity throughout the week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, TBD as to like, how, as that capacity gets unlocked, then it gets redeployed. But those two things are important, and it requires organizations to just be explicit, right?
Yeah.
What are you going to do as you make these investments in AI and automation, and therefore what that means for the workers, for the humans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like we, you know, you're just making me think. It's like there's a whole, and this really comes from like education, right? How people learn. And, you know, I think, you know, I teach at the School of Ed too. And it's, so it's like both from an educational perspective. It's like, think of if you want someone to ride a bike, if you have kids and you're like, get on the bike, this bike's going to be the best. It's super cool. It's super fast. It's amazing.
Yep.
People are like, little kids are like, God, no, I don't know how to ride a bike. I'm going to fall over. I'm going to get hurt. Like, what, like, what's going to happen here? But then like really drilling down on what the motivation is and starting slow. And I'm just thinking what you're really talking about is like scaffolding. And then, like, how do you actually sit with your employees and like talk about their pain points? Like, this is very much a coaching mentality. What are the biggest pain points they have? And then how can AI or tech like solve that? And then really scaffolding out the journey to like basically have a little bit of exposure therapy around like, this isn't so bad. This isn't so distant, and build some like self-efficacy and confidence and exposure to the tool that they can then extrapolate to like other things, but it's like, we know how to teach people, right? Yep. And we don't try to convincing and cajoling all that doesn't work. People just like, get reactive and defensive and feel like you don't understand them.
Yeah.
But how can you actually look to them and say, like, what are your biggest pain points? I'm going to give you, you know, 6 or 10 sessions with our tech person who's going to help you hold your hand and get you going and get the bike rolling a little bit until you can do it on your own.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's how we would, like, you know, get there and have both a better optimized workforce, but also a workforce that feels like, we know learning and growth is a thing that humans need. Yep. They're like, people are going to feel excited. I just saw my mother-in-law yesterday.
Yep.
It's really funny. And she's like, always calling my kids, because of course she thinks I could be like doing better things in terms of educating my kids and not working as much and all the things. So she FaceTimes my kids and like teaches them vocab words. Like, I don't even know when at night. And so she was, you know, I think my son's reading The Great Gatsby right now. And she was just kind of coming up with her own vocab words and contextualizing. And then she discovered that like AI can do this for her in like 30 seconds, like pull 10, you know, not 30 seconds, like 0.3 seconds, but pull 10 words from Great Gatsby, give me examples, and then, you know, put together a few questions for, you know, a 14-year-old boy around, like, anyway, so she's all excited about it. She feels like she's learning, she's growing, she's, you know, being a great grandma, she's helping my kids. But I feel like it's such a good metaphor for kind of like everyone. She's 82, right? Yep. If my 82-year-old grandma or mother-in-law can do this, like, anyone within a workplace can really like do this.
Absolutely. And I love that example. And I've seen such cool examples out, you know, in the news, you know, anecdotal sharing of things like parent took AI to bring to life child's drawings. Right.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And there are then these reactions of, how are you helping that child learn to be creative? It's so cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fascinating because there are, I think there was a point in time, I forget where I kind of learned this, but it was a perspective on at what point in life do we sometimes start to tamp down on the creativity of some people and elevate it for others, right?
Interesting.
And what does that do in terms of contributing to a growth mindset or like the desire to learn and grow and change, right? Because to an extent, like to be human is to grow. The end, right?
Yeah.
All we are doing our entire lives is responding to stimuli and adjusting somehow. Sometimes we're just not aware of it and it's a multi-year change, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes we're very aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's folks probably now in the moment, right? Like your mother-in-law who are like, I love to learn new things. I love to use new technology. Wow, this is so cool. You know, how can I be a better, you know, a grandparent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there are many people who are like, I have augmented myself, right? I can be, you know, do something that much faster, better, you know, different. There are other people who are definitely from that, you know, anxiety perspective. It's like, oh, well, if I can't do this for my grandchildren, what is my role?
Oh, right? Yeah. Like it challenges their identity. Totally.
Right. Uh-huh. Right. And so it's then how do we help people through that initial reaction to say, here's what it's all about. And ultimately, like that human to human connection, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to change between your mother-in-law and, you know, your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what will be a very fascinating learning journey is as your kids begin to learn to use AI, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that become a two-way dialogue and conversation, human to human? Here's how I learned it. Here's how I did it. What do you think, Grandma? Like, so it's a very simple life example. But we then need to create the space in organizations to do the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, so at Deloitte, we have a Gen AI you know, tool that we call Sidekick that we've rolled out for employees to use. And we use our own, the four factors of trust measure that I shared earlier, we use that on ourselves. And we did, when we first rolled it out, And then we took some actions, right? And one example was like, share these savvy user profiles. So like mm-hmm. find people at different levels and different groups and put them in front of their peers and share the stories. Mm-hmm. How am I using this tool, right? How am I doing work differently, better, et cetera? And we saw that more people start out using it and then trust in the tool itself go up, right?
Totally.
So you can take that type of example and magnify it across, again, any industry, sector, role, field, et cetera. And how do you have the conversation explicitly around what is mm-hmm. doing this differently look like? And therefore, what does that mean for the workers?
Yeah, I love that. You're making me think of like CLDD's like principles of persuasion and social proof, really. And thinking about like, you know, so the things are coming to mind listening to you is like readiness for change, right? There might be people like my mother-in-law who's willing. She's like a very spry, active, is in like 4 book groups running around. She came to this conference with me yesterday because she was excited about it. That kind of person who's willing to dive in, her readiness to change is pretty high. You're going to, you know, my mom would like never kind of be that person. She'd be like, whoa, that's like way above my pay grade. I'm just not going to like, but if I'm applying the same approach to my mother or my mom, I'm just going to lose one of them.
Yeah.
Like they're just at different places. So that's where the coaching thing comes in, which is like, how do you actually get very curious about where people are and then tailor your intervention based on that?
Yep.
Does this person need education? Do they need exposure? Do they need to see someone else? Are they ready to take action? And the other thing it made me think is like kind of, you kind of like, this is like a question, I guess, or like, just thinking out loud, like an intervention could be really helping taking a survey. Like, what are your biggest pain points of thinking? What's that 40% where you're losing your time? And then using case studies around that to like start having people demonstrate that. Absolutely. And then like really having kind of classes around these things as like entry points or something.
Well, and you know, Bobby's mom, if you're listening, we know that you might be an example of many people in the workforce or, you know, in the world who sometimes are just skeptics at the beginning, right? Prove it to me that this is new and different, right? And it's not just going to be the same thing, right? And so it's something that it's very important to understand. And there have been examples of many organizations who will survey their workforce and say, okay, who are my early technology adopters? Other end of the spectrum, who are the skeptics, right? And how do I perhaps take advantage of those early adopters to prove it out, test it, pilot it, show it in measurable ways how the work is different to thus help me convince the skeptic?
Yeah.
Or do I also identify which of the skeptics perhaps sits at the intersection of different teams? And therefore, if I can convince that skeptic, their impact is going to be that much more amplified on the other in terms of adopting, right? So there are absolutely some different kind of targeted interventions. Yeah. It should absolutely, one of the things that we've seen relative to the capacity question, there needs to be the very explicit, like, what's in it for me, right?
Totally.
It's got to acknowledge everything that's going on in that individual's world, right? Because part of the research we've also seen is the pace of organizational change has just continued to increase dramatically. Oh, yeah. Like a decade ago, you might have 2 major changes a year in the work world, let alone the broader world. Now it's like 10, right?
Yeah.
And that's on top of my teammate is sick, or I have a new hire, or someone leaves, or I have a promotion. You know, those are just like baseline changes we don't always acknowledge. But so if I think about all those things, I could come and say, okay, workers, you said better understanding of benefits policies was a problem. Mm-hmm. So we have now step 1, AI automation can help you answer the questions that much better, faster, contextualized to you as an individual, the country that you live in, you know, pick your set of dimensions. And then you prove it out. And then people are like, great, wow, yeah, now I don't have to search it. Now I don't have to call someone. Now I don't have to submit a case. It takes me 48 hours to get a response. Like 5 minutes or less, I've got the answer I need. On I go. And now maybe my own personal stress about a benefits question is lowered. Wow, now I'm a more productive worker, right? It comes back to, can you link it back to the business outcome at the same time as you're driving a human outcome? And so again, this is some of those things, where do you make things explicit for as we unlock that capacity or as we make the investments to unlock capacity, how are workers actually seeing, okay, you're investing in a thing that I care about, therefore I will use it. We can now measure that, you know, the capacity is being unlocked versus what it was before.
Yeah. I'm like, get all excited about these conversations. I'm like, oh my God, we're already at 35 minutes and we've got to like end. And I didn't even ask you any of the three questions that I told you I was going to ask you.
We touched on them in different ways.
You're generous, but I just was so excited about everything you're sharing. But if I was going to like look back and do a little bit of a summary, you know, it's like really, you know, your expertise is really, it seems like you approach your work really as sort of the future of HR and like really kind of people and business intersection is really like pausing, stepping back, externalizing, looking at where we are, and then really drilling down on the human part of it. Like how, what's the human experience here and how do we meet the needs of the human? And then we kind of like got into AI, so, surprise, surprise, like, but really around, you know, there's this pressure for people to upskill their employees around AI. And I think what I'm hearing you say, and I agree 100%. So I might be like filtering this through my, you know, what I think, but it's like, AI is a tool, tech's a tool, but how do you really drill down on the individual that people need and then educate them in scaffold learning so they feel more competent, build self-efficacy, and then can use this tool to, you know, increase their capacity, which we know, according to your research, which of course is like just huge global research and the go-to resource, is that 40% of people are missing out about like 40%, missing out on capacity by like 40%, right? Like, and there's a real opportunity there to invest time and energy and kind of moving towards the human and getting them comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if there were like three calls to action that I were to give people or to take away, number one would be, as you're trying to focus on some sort of business outcome, be clear on what the human outcome is. Talk about it at the same time, right? If I'm going to implement AI, what does that mean for the workers, right? And let's talk about it at the same time. The second would then be, make sure whatever the business outcome that you're trying to drive is tied to a human pain point. And that human is a customer or a worker or something, right? Because if you can tie it to a pain point, you know for sure people are going to be willing to try and improve that pain point. Right. And then the third piece is, how do you then, as you go and execute on something, also contextualize for human psychology, right? Who's going to adopt this faster? Who's going to be skeptical? How do I think about the different ways that I help people along the journey? Right.
Yeah.
Because all of this comes down to, and you know, I know from everything that you're doing with this program, is understanding the psychology of the humans involved and making that an explicit part of the conversation to drive better outcomes.
That's exactly it. So it's like, that's our goal is like, and it's really focused on, and I actually just wrote a piece on this, like sort of like AI and automation efficiency, but like, what is the counterbalance is like, well, what's your connection strategy? That's a human need here. So as we're getting more distant, like, well, what's the connection, the cohesion, the team strategy? That can be our next chat, because I definitely want you back on here. But Kyle, you're absolutely awesome. What, anything you like, I didn't ask you about, or if people want to get in touch with you, or any recommendations? Like, you, I seem like you read and watch a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like anything that you're particularly loving, or, you know.
So folks, don't hesitate. You can find me on LinkedIn, or I've got some information available on our Deloitte.com website. And we're always happy, you know, Deloitte's always happy to come share some of our research at your organizations with teams, or you can find that accessible and kind of dive in. And we've even made some of it that much easier to access via short videos, infographics beyond just the research report itself. But I would say things that I'm kind of thinking about, reading about, and that I would suggest that people do is other macro trends in the world that are related, right? So demographics. 2025 is the largest graduating class from high school in the US that we will probably ever see again. What does that mean for the workforce going forward, right? within the next 4 years, every baby boomer will have hit retirement. What does that mean for those workers, right? And knowledge capture, transition, education to the workforce coming in. There's the technological piece, absolutely, right? So there's all these different things that is important to understand the connections. And so thus, how do you understand all of that, you know, as a holistic system, not different things in isolation?
Yeah, I can totally see how that's how you think. And my mind goes there too. You toggle between the macro and the micro, right? Like what's the larger context?
Yep.
And then how do you actually solve for it on a like more of an individual basis like today?
Yeah.
But I think really great leaders like do both.
Yep.
You got to step back, externalize, look, and then actually solve for it by like individual by individual.
Yep. Yeah.
You know,
it's all we can do, one step at a time.
And I'm definitely having you come to class to talk about this stuff. So I'm going to hit you up for that and share all this amazing research, because one of the biggest things our students, our org psych students, are just need language and stats to better support and promote this work.
Yep.
So thank you so much for spending time with me today, Kyle. I just really appreciate it.
Absolutely. This was a lot of fun. Happy to be here.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Kyle.
Yep. Take care, all.